Second hour, Darren Dunnick and Chase here on this Thursday. Darren McFarland, Willie Dunnick, Chase McCabe with you. We'll learn a little bit about the Titans' opponent in week two. We head out to Seattle for the final hour of the program. We'll check in with John Clayton, who'll give us the latest on the Seahawks. But first, let's talk with Richard Deitch from The Athletic. We talked a lot on the show, Richard, Tuesday, what a lot of people were talking about. The extra option that we had for Monday Night Football. It ended up being a wild game. But what's crazy is we weren't really talking about the wild finish as much as you thought we would be, because we were talking about the other option in Peyton Manning and Eli Manning, and the returns are in, and it sounds like it wasn't just us watching that option.
Well, I mean, listen, what station am I talking to? Doesn't Peyton Manning, isn't he still considered Mount Rushmore status in Tennessee?
It's kind of a big deal, yeah, in this state.
Yeah. So, yeah, I saw that poster of Manning during the Manning Megacast back in Tennessee. It was like, reminded me of like the old WWE posters, like Randy Savage or Roddy Piper or something like that. Very old school. So here's what you have, sort of have to and by the way, good to be with you guys. It's been a while.
Yeah.
So here's what you sort of got to think about in terms of like, or at least I sort of what I think about in terms of like offering sort of an analysis of the Manning Megacast. Like, part one of it is like, how did the people who watched it process it? Like, what did they think of it? And that was an overwhelming success, at least anecdotally. I think the people who watched it thought the brothers had great chemistry after a pretty, you know, really hot start, a little troubling start in terms of just trying to do too much. Their interaction with guests I thought was really, really good, which I thought would be a big question because they opted not to have a host. When they sort of stopped showing a lot of stuff on screen and just gave us Peyton and Eli and maybe Peyton, Eli, and Russell Wilson or something like that, like, you actually learned a lot. Like, you could really tell, like, why these guys were sort of great thinkers in the game, because they were just able to diagnose and explain to you so many things. So if you were a hardcore football fan, I thought it was a really, really interesting broadcast. The next part is, okay, so how many people watched? And this is what your listeners should always remember when it comes to these kind of like additive kind of plays. We really are creatures of habit when it comes to sports broadcasting. And by and large, we're going to stick with what we know. And so you always sort of, I think, or the average fan, I think, thinks that more people are watching like this sort of additional broadcast than the reality. The reality is people just want to sort of stick to their comfort level, which might be ESPN or ABC. And so the Manning Megacast drew 800,000 viewers. That's a pretty good number for sort of an additive play. But, you know, the main broadcast, the big broadcast, drew 15 million or something like that. So, you know, not even close, not even in the same universe in terms of, you know, where people decided to watch. But I think a very big success for ESPN. They got great great press out of it. They have a really good relationship now with Peyton and Eli Manning, which I think could have value for them down the road. And they're offering viewers more choice. And to me, when you offer viewers more choice, that's a good thing. That's a good thing for everybody.
Well, you're the perfect guy to ask this, because we've talked to you so much over the years about it, and you track this stuff so well. Yes, the game was being shown on ESPN and ABC, so that's a massive platform. I guess I want to know from you, where does that number stack up for anything they've thrown on ESPN2 over the years? Like, is that got to be one of their more highly rated thing? I don't know. How did that stack up for being on ESPN2?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, it's a little bit of an apples to oranges comparison, because, like, you know, like, if you put a college football game on ESPN2, right, or if you put an NBA game or something like that, like, it's going to draw seven figures. I mean, just, you know, live game programming will do that. But, you know, compared to, like, traditional ESPN2 programming, like, whatever even that means anymore,
yeah,
it's pretty high. Like, it's significant. You know, again, I think if you're ESPN, you sort of have to look at it, I think, like, longitudinally and larger. Like, you look at it as, are we making our Monday Night Football, like, programming better, more interesting? And you, like, look at that, like, writ large, and they absolutely are. Because you're now giving, I think you give hardcore football fans, like, this secondary option, which is interesting. You give maybe some people the chance to pop into the Manning broadcast, The Manning broadcast, I have no doubt, at some points will cross over, and you'll see a little bit of it on the ABC ESPN broadcast. And then you're still doing, you know, you're still giving them the traditional like meat and potatoes of the main broadcast. So it's a big win for ESPN. And to be very honest with you, they have had once again a brutal year when it comes to like bad publicity, self-inflicted mistakes. And so this is a really good win for them, and it follows up a big win for them in that, you know, they re-signed with the NFL. They're in the Super Bowl rotation. I get it. Like, if you got $3 billion or whatever, you can get into the Super Bowl rotation. But, like, they've done a really good job positioning themselves with their NFL content to head forward into the future, whether that future is on traditional cable or ABC, or whether that future is on ESPN Plus and some kind of streaming platform.
Richard, I brought this up on Tuesday, and we were talking about it in depth. And tell me if you agree or disagree. Something that stood out to me is, like you, I really enjoyed the guest. I thought it was fantastic, whether it was, you know, Ray Lewis, who's a former player, but then you get into current players like Travis Kelce and, at the end, Russell Wilson. But here's the one thing that I'm going to be very curious moving forward if they continue to go down the path of current player. Something that stood out to me is, when you see how that game unfolded late, Russell Wilson is just caught up in the moment like the rest of us, right? So he's talking out loud. The problem is everybody is now watching and hearing what he's saying out loud, including maybe opponents right. that he's going to be facing down the road. I do wonder if they're going to struggle with getting current players to come on and say anything moving forward, because I thought he kind of got into that gray area, little dicey area, talking about the Ravens and the Raiders, which, oh, by the way, the Raiders are Travis Kelce, if he says anything, the Raiders are in his division. But with Russell Wilson, you know, you just don't know if down the road they're like, I don't remember what you said, you know, on that broadcast with Peyton and Eli. I haven't forgotten. I wonder if that'll be an issue moving forward down the road.
You guys there?
Yep.
Oh, there we go. You fell it out. I would say this. You got to always remember that there's a little bit of performative sort of, you know, broadcasting going on with the guests. So I think Russell Wilson is all the time self-censoring himself, and I think Travis Kelce all the time is self-censoring. But, yeah, I mean, the possibility certainly exists if somebody says something really provocative on the Manning Megacast, like that's going to get out there to the other teams. But I would say that, like, that's no different, right, than like your average, like, you know, Tuesday and Wednesday press conference. If a player X says something that the opponents pick up on, so I think, to me, I think if you are someone who's currently playing in the NFL who wants to be a broadcaster, which I think Russell Wilson does, or wants to have some kind of you know, post-career in entertainment, you know, sort of capital E, I think it's a great forum to be on. And if you notice the people who are the guests, right, Barkley, obviously, you know, maybe arguably the greatest studio host of all time. Ray Lewis is in broadcasting, had designs in broadcasting, you know, from the time he left broadcasting. I don't know what Travis Kelce's interests are, but I would guess he probably would like to do something after that, after his career is over. And I know Russell Wilson would like to get into that down the road. So it's, you know, these are free for, you know, this is like free reps in front of a million people, but perhaps more importantly, free reps in front of ESPN executives.
We're talking to Richard Deitch from The Athletic. And Richard, I've really been enjoying your podcast here recently. And one of the things that you've been centering in on, you're getting a lot of interesting perspectives on this. You asked them the same question. That is, how is the legalization of gambling? And of course, in our state, we've had it for a little over a year now. So we're just now sinking in, and you can see how it affects our show and the advertising on our show, all of these things. And you're asking a lot of media people how it's going to change the way we watch sports. What do you think is maybe the prevailing thought, maybe a consensus that you're getting when you ask that question to so many experts?
Yeah, first of all, I find my show incredibly boring. So thank you for thank you.
It's
thank
not
you
boring. It's a good podcast.
Well, inspires Willie to work out. So kudos to you, because he does a lot of working out to your podcast. So
yeah, a lot of long jogs for you. Yeah, it keeps me moving.
Yeah, I mean, really rampant. It's like hip hop. Yeah, my podcast. Congratulations to me. Yeah. So I mean, it really, honestly, Willie, depends on like who I ask. Like if I ask like on-air people, you know, what they have said, and I've had a couple guests on who've obviously moved to this landscape, is there's just so much money to be had if you're a on-air personality who is willing to work in the gambling space, and that, and like I'm using gambling space as like a massive space. Like, there's really massive opportunity there. You know, you look at all the money that's floated into the leagues, you look at all the money that's floated into the networks. And so, you know, if you're a Trey Wingo or Kenny Mayne type, if you have any kind of name recognition, and then if you want to just sort of micro it, let's say you're somebody in Nashville or Knoxville who's a name, you can get employment or you can find some kind of money play with these gambling companies. So that's sort of first and foremost. It's just the sheer amount of money in the space is huge. In terms of what's going to happen, I think you're slowly, not necessarily quickly, but slowly going to see more and more gambling content in traditional places. I don't think it's ever going to get to like look like the Vegas Sports Network or something like that. You're not going to see like odds all over the place on screens and literally like every conversation about gambling. But I think you'll see slowly more and more gambling talk. The one really interesting question to me is, you know, let's take the NFL. Does the NFL eventually sort of tell its broadcast partners that we're fine with you guys talking gambling on air? Because the NFL wants it. They're really hypocritical in this sense. The NFL really wants it both ways, right? They want the millions and billions of dollars that the Caesars of the world and places like that are going to pay to be part of the NFL. But the NFL doesn't really necessarily want that conversation so much on Sunday Night Football or the Fox and CBS 425 p.m. games. But I think at a certain point, like, that just seems silly to me. So I think even just letting your analysis just sort of discuss, all right, right now, hey, you know, we're at, you know, 62 points. The over-under in this game is 65, just a heads up. I would think that's going to come, but right now the NFL has been real clear. Like, they don't want that on their screen because they're trying to navigate between the gamblers and non-gamblers. I just find that pretty hypocritical because it's just so silly. Like, the NFL's taking all this money, but, you know, you're not going to acknowledge it on your product. But so the short answer is there's a ton of money, and until the money dries up, which I'm not sure it's going to dry up anytime soon, you're going to see people head to these opportunities with gambling companies, and then I think you're just going to see slowly more and more gambling-related content flow to TV, flow to, you know, radio shows like you, flow to podcasts. It's just, it's kind of inevitable because that's where monetization can be right now.
How did you think that Drew Brees has done the last couple of times out? Because he's certainly a key pickup for NBC, and they've got big plans for him. But, of course, we got to find out if he can do this.
Yeah, you know, I was pretty pleasantly surprised. I did not hear him on Notre Dame football because you would literally have to shoot me before I paid money to watch Notre Dame football on a streaming service. You know, I'm not at that.
Not high on your priority list, I guess.
Yeah, no offense.
That's an interesting ploy, just like we've been talking about a lot. Yeah. People want to draw to that. If you're a Notre Dame fan, you probably pay the money.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't grow up in South Bend, Indiana. I grew up around New York. Like, you know, Rudy to me is a movie. It's not a way of life. No offense to the Notre Dame people. But when I saw him on Football Night in America, I thought he was pretty good. I don't know if I read that totally wrong, but I thought he had interesting things to say. He looked and felt really comfortable on camera. He was self-deprecating. I saw a lot of potential there. You know, the one thing, I'll tell you, it was a really small thing, but I saw a highlight that he did. It was the Packers, and Aaron Rodgers forced a pass into some pretty tough coverage after sort of the pocket broke down. And Brees was critical. He said something to the effect of that you cannot throw that pass at this time in the game. And, like, I took a note of that. I was like, wow. Like, you know, one of the things that's very hard for these guys to do is to be critical of their peers or players, you know, when criticism is sort of fair and warranted. And he was willing to do that. So I was impressed. You know, all the times I've seen Drew in press conference situations and interview situations, I've always found him to be a pretty good interview and a pretty interesting guy. So I'm optimistic that he could be good. You know, again, like long term, their investment is, can he you know, be their successor to Chris Collinsworth? Can he and Mike Tirico, you know, 5 years from now be the team? So that's really, that's what this is all about. This isn't about Notre Dame football, and that's not about Football Night in America. It's going to be about, is Drew Brees like the investment that we have on our most important property, Sunday Night Football? And we're not going to know that answer for, you know, a year or two. But at least on first glance, like what I saw in the studio, I liked. I thought it was pretty good.
Talking to Richard Deitch of The Athletic. And Richard, tonight the NFL is supposed to make an announcement regarding the future of Hard Knocks, something
right.
that we talk about a lot on this show. The Cowboys were on it this year, and I'm a Cowboys fan, and I really wasn't all that entertained by it. I thought it was kind of a boring season for the show.
you were not alone, by the way, based on the rating.
Yeah. So, what do you think this is all about, and what can fix Hard Knocks? I mean, we've always said let everybody be on it and get rid of these silly rules, but what do you think?
I am sure they're not going to cancel it. That's one thing I can guarantee. Like, I can tell you that cold, that Hard Knocks isn't going to go anywhere. What I expect this to be would be some kind of announcement as to what team is next. That's going to be my guess. And, you know, what team is next either for training camp or, you know, maybe something else. Maybe they'll do something in season, like just to change it up. But that's what I don't think they're announcing. Let's put it this way. There's no way the NFL would sort of like come up with, hey, stay tuned and pay attention to this announcement because we're going to cancel the show or say something bad about the show. You know what I mean? Like
right.
They put this out there because they think they have something interesting that's going to attract more viewers. And to me, the way I'd read that is, well, they think they have a concept or a team or an idea that's going to be good. So that's what I would look for. I think, and this is just my guess, I think the problem with Hard Knocks isn't even necessarily Hard Knocks. I think the problem is, like, there's so many of these behind-the-scenes things that now exist. You know, whether it's, like, an Amazon documentary that does it, or whether it's the team, like, website itself that gives you sort of behind-the-scenes stuff, even if it's sort of like, you know, sort of saccharine kind of, like, you know, like sugar-free stuff, basically. What Hard Knocks does is not so unique. So to me, because of that, they really need to find the right team. You know, they really need to get the right storyline, or they really need to get some kind of players or coaches who just like are unafraid to say something to the camera. And that's tricky because, like, how do you know? You know,
well,
we
talked about it, Richard, on
the
show. Drop the rules. I mean, just drop the silly rules and just pick the best team.
I agree with that. 100%. Yep, 100%. Like, this is where, like, to me, the NFL league office has to make a decision. Like, I get it. Like, Hard Knocks is a pain in the butt for the coaches. I mean, you know, coaches are absurd. They're like, you know, one level short of the CIA or like the East German spy machine. Like, they don't want anybody around, right? But here's the deal. Like if you are partnered with Hard Knocks and if you're partnered with HBO and like this is part of your league, right? I'm totally with you. Like, the league has to say, listen, like this is part of your commitment to the NFL. And so if Hard Knocks chooses you, like that's it. You're getting chosen, and stop complaining. And, you know, Hard Knocks will make one deal where they just don't have the same team, like, you know, like the following year. But I'm with you. Like, I think there are certain teams that just are more interesting than others. Clearly, there are certain teams that people have more interest in. And I think if you gave Hard Knocks a little bit, or, you know, or the NFL Films is in this case, like, more discretion on who to choose, I mean, to me, I don't know if you guys would agree. Like, I feel like the Jaguars would have been a million times more interesting than the Cowboys, right?
We said that. Yeah. We were going through better storylines. Yeah.
Urban Meyer. Yeah. I mean, I don't even like Urban Meyer at all, but, like, that would have been interesting. Like, because, like, there's, like, 20 levels of story there. So I'm with you. I think part of it, I know the Cowboys are the most popular team in football. That's unquestionably so based on viewership. But for whatever reason, like, that just, it didn't pop. It just was not very interesting this year. When your highlight of your year is like this incredible drone footage that sort of goes through
the
stadium.
Yep, that was the best part of
it.
Yep.
That tells you something right there, does it not?
No doubt. It's like you were in on the conversation. That was the highlight of five episodes. That's it. They were. It was. I said on the show. And these guys know. I watch it every year, no matter what. And it's hard for me to get to say anything negative because I really like it. I said it was the worst one that I've ever seen. It was dead last.
Yeah. And that has nothing to do with the NFL Films people, who are incredible at what they do. But you can only work with, you know what I mean? You only have what's in front of you to work with.
Yeah. Richard, real quick, Lisa Byington has been named the play-by-play for the Milwaukee Bucks on Bally Sports. Pretty cool to see that honor go to her, as she'll be the first full-time female play-by-play announcer in a major men's pro sport. What does this mean moving forward?
And tell us her background. Just for people that don't know how she arrived at this.
Yeah, so Lisa Byington, I mean, it's a very good hire. She's a very good broadcaster. She actually had a pioneering thing this past March, where she became the first woman to call the NCAA men's tournament. She had a couple games, if you guys remember. Longtime Big Ten football broadcaster, also has done fill-in games for the Bulls. It's called a lot of soccer, men's and women's for Fox. So, you know, this is a broadcaster with a lot of reps and a lot of experience. I think I have no doubt she'll do really, really well. She gets a great job because, I mean, the Bucks are the defending champion. And what it does tell you is, you know, the NBA, when it comes to women in the booth, they're way ahead of everybody. I mean, just Sarah Kustak, Kara Lawson, look at all Stephanie Reddy, look at all the people who've been color analysts in the NBA. So what it tells me is, like, are we going to get this in the NFL? You know, are we going to get more women in Major League Baseball? There's only one so far in terms of play-by-play, Melanie Newman, who's done, Susan Wallman does the radio, but Melanie Newman ended up doing a national TV game. So that'll be the big question to me is, like, you know, will some of these other sports kind of break the glass ceiling? The ceiling's been broken when it comes to analysts, but that's the last sort of one here, you know, play-by-play. Willie would know this, Leah Hextall. A little bit of a pioneer. She just got a job, I think, with ESPN. So she'll be calling national hockey games. So to me, in broadcasting, that's kind of the last, in terms of on-air ceilings, that's the last one. There's still really, really tiny amount of women who do play-by-play. And a lot of that, and I'm sure Willie can attest to this, is you got to get opportunities in the lower levels, whatever the minor leagues are, in order to get the reps so that people notice you. So if the real change is going to occur, it has to occur at the lower level so that women can get the reps, so that, you know, when these big jobs come up, you know, these will be women with, like, you know, mass amount of G League calling experience or mass amount of minor league baseball experience or college football experience. And I don't know, I'd like to think in 2021 that, like, no one's going to give a bleep about, like, the tenor or if your voice is a little higher. Like, I've hopefully it's just about, like, if you call a good game and your content's good, like, it really doesn't matter if it's a man or a woman calling.
Yeah, no doubt. You mentioned the NBA. I mean, Becky Hammon's going to be head coach here eventually, I would think.
Although I would have thought it would have been this year. So, I agree with you, but, like, ton of openings, and it didn't happen. I don't know. I'd like to see. I would just like to see somebody do it. Not only do I think Becky Hammon at this point has the resume. I just feel like once, like, a lot of the stuff, this is what sports is about. Like, once you think something, like, once something happens that you've never seen before, and then you realize, like, it's not a big deal, like, then it's really not a big deal, if that makes sense. I mean, we're not so far removed.
Sure.
You guys know this. In the 1970s, where, like, you know, there were idiot people in NFL personnel departments who thought a black person couldn't be a quarterback. Like, imagine telling that to somebody today in 2021. You'd be like, what are you, an insane human being? You know what I'm saying?
So, like,
Like, once upon a time, like, whenever, like, it breaks, whenever, like, whatever you think can't be done or hasn't been done, like, actually gets done and you realize it's not really a big deal, that's when the dam breaks. But I got to be honest, if you would have asked me, like, I would have taken the over on Becky Hammon getting hired in this cycle, just given all the openings. So a little surprised. And so, I don't know. I'm still going to take an owner who's like, F it, man. I'm just going to do it. I'm not going to think twice, and let's roll.
Yeah. Well, Richard, we appreciate the time today. It's good to talk to you. It has been too long. We'll make sure not to wait this long next time. But thanks for coming on with us.
All right. I hope your Titans going to win one of these days.
Absolutely. Richard Deitch of The Athletic, the media circus. Always enjoy our conversations with him. Silly Underdog Picks coming up at noon. We'll have much more coming as you listen to Darren, Donick, and Chase on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Special thanks to Richard Deitch for joining us. Always a good conversation with him. You can also join us in partnering with Leukemia and Lymphoma Society's Light the Night. Light the Night brings light to the darkness of cancer through hope, research, and support for patients and families. Through this inspirational nationwide movement, we raise awareness and funding for groundbreaking research and treatment options to eliminate cancer. Nashville's Light the Night will be virtual and take place on November 4th. Learn more at lightthenight.org/TN. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, presented by Curation CBD. Curation CBD, products curated for life. So we go back over to our kicker desk. Elijah Campbell is standing by. Don't forget, Silly Underdog Picks coming up at high noon. John Clayton at 1 o'clock to begin the final hour. But we've been talking a lot about Titans kickers and who may be on their way to Nashville to maybe try out for the kicking spot. Because who knows, this could be like a weekly thing for this team. And that's next man up today, as we sit here on Thursday morning, is Randy Bullock. But we were talking about the rest of the kickers around the league, and we wanted to know, Elijah, like all these guys that kicked in week one, like what's their story? What's their journey? What's their path? How'd they get there? Were they an undrafted guy? Were they actually drafted? How did they get where they were? So you've got some data to share with us. So let's. I'm going to turn things over to you.
I crunched the numbers, and the great kicker study of 2021 has finally been wrapped up.
By the way, this show needs to do more crunches. It really does.
It does. So
wouldn't
yeah.
hurt.
Yeah,
wouldn't
get myself.
Hurt. They might hurt, but you know.
It hurt physically, but not in the long run. Short
Chase,
pain.
I saw you in that AJ Brown shirt. Will they get you a medium? Can they get you a little bit more, a little bit bigger shirt?
Yeah. Huh? I needed a
looked a little bit tight, a little bit snug.
Wasn't too bad.
It's showing off the definition.
Yeah, the high definition.
The beauties and the details.
Right. That's right. Thank you, Elijah. Thank you, Willie.
Well, you don't seem to be pushing back.
Bite me.
There was his pushback.
There you go.
Oh, all right. Thank you. It
what
is
are we
lunchtime.
Talking about?
Okay,
yeah.
Elijah, back to
what,
you.
Yeah, what were we at?
Kick me rather than.
Yeah. Would have been more appropriate. But so in week one, out of the 31 teams that actually kicked footballs, so this is everybody minus the Jets, the average kicker was in the league for 7.5 years and was on their second team. The average, so you had a couple of kickers that played for over a decade for the same team, and then you have your Chase McLaughlins who are averaging two teams a year. 13 of those 31 kickers were drafted. 5 were fifth rounders, 5 were sixth rounders, and 3 were seventh rounders.
Okay,
wow. So
close
to half.
7's the sweet spot.
Yeah, close to half.
Now that surprised me. I would have said the number was less than 10.
Yeah, I would have too. So say it one more time. 5.
So 13 out of 31. 13 out of 31 were drafted.
Yes, were drafted. 5 were fifth rounders. 5 of them were sixth rounders, and 3 were seventh rounders. 4 of the kickers that kicked on Sunday that were drafted are still kicking for the team that drafted them. So Jason Sanders, who's in his fourth year with the Miami Dolphins. Tyler Bass, who's in with his second year with the Bills. Evan McPherson, drafted this past year for the Bengals, made the roster and made the game-winning kick. And then Mason Crosby, who's played over a decade for the Packers.
Okay, so that's an interesting set. So how many? There's 13 that were drafted originally, but only 4 are with the team that drafted them. So there's a bunch of guys, a bunch of teams who obviously drafted a kicker, then cut them, or release them, whatever.
Well, there'll be 9 teams.
So 9 teams drafted a kicker and said, you know what, we wasted the draft pick on this guy, he's no good, only to see that guy go on to another team and make it.
Yeah, that's that was just this year. Point. You still have your Nick Foulkes, who did play for a couple years for that team, but usually no more than that. And then this is one of the most interesting ones. 3 of the kickers that were drafted that kicked on Sunday never kicked or appeared in a game for the team that drafted them. Harrison Butker, Dustin Hopkins, Jake Elliott.
Harrison
were all
Butker.
Drafted and never played for the teams that
I feel like we're learning something here.
The league.
Yeah. I feel like we're learning something.
All right,
here.
So Harrison.
So who drafted Harrison Butker?
That's what I'm looking at.
Harrison Butker.
He was drafted.
I saw that one not too long ago.
Carolina.
Yep, it was Carolina. And never appeared.
Never appeared and then ended up in KC.
So he lost. So he. I'd be curious to go back and look who he lost the kicking battle to. Well, would it have been Gano?
It might have been Gano.
That he lost the kicking battle to in 2017, and then he was picked up by the Chiefs and took that.
Never looked back.
Seventh round pick in the 2017 draft. He was the third and last kicker selected in 2017. They signed him to a 4-year, $2.48 million contract. He was waived September 13th in favor of Graham Gano, don't you know, and was signed to the practice squad the next day. But then he was signed off their practice squad by KC on September 26, 2017. So, and he's been there ever since.
Isn't it? So we would say Justin Tucker, Harrison Butker, top two in the league?
I think it's fair. Jason Sanders from Miami is getting up there too. He was really accurate last year.
Koo had a really good year. But so Butker was drafted, Tucker was not.
Correct.
Yes.
Sanders was
drafted.
Koo said, was not.
Koo was undrafted.
You said Jake Elliott was the other one drafted?
Yeah, Jake Elliott drafted by the Bengals, cut by September 3rd before their opener, and then signed by the Eagles 10 days later.
But I think what
played
we
college
see,
football where?
Who?
Jake
Memphis.
Elliott? Yep, Memphis.
Jake Elliott was, yeah. Uh-huh. You know what? Memphis has pumped out some kickers, haven't they? Did you say Memphis?
Yeah.
Memphis, yep.
Yeah, they've pumped out some kickers over the years.
Well, who else?
A Gostkowski? Yeah,
I think the true. More you study this, the more
and there's missing one other one. Let me think about it. There's another one that was a kicker a long time in the league.
Right? No.
Well, the more while you look, the more you study this, the more it reinforces how many different pathways these kickers take before they get the stake in the ground and get their regular job. So I think you could have any theory you want. What's the best way to develop and find the kicker? And I just don't think there's one way to do it. So it comes back to how much do you value the position? And I just think you could value it as much as you want or as little as you want. You still have kind of a crapshoot on how you're going to find the guy. Drafting the guy and putting him right in your lineup, we see by these examples, works occasionally, doesn't work occasionally. You know, just having a tryout of different guys and, you know, try to settle on a guy, sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't.
Wayne on Twitter says we could try more captain crunches. That's
Captain Crunch. I'm a big fan.
That's more my speed.
Especially if you have the berries in there. What are those called? The crunch berries? That's key. Captain Crunch with the crunch berries?
I would just take the original.
Yeah. I'm more
just straight up. Yeah. Just straight up crunch.
Yep.
Now here's an interesting one for you. Riley, you're talking about Memphis kickers. Patterson.
I can't think of it.
Riley Patterson is their most recent kicker and is top three behind the two guys we just were talking about. Mm-hmm. And he's a free agent. He's not on a team. He was in camp with the Vikings.
I was going to say, he was in a camp, right?
Yeah, but he's not. He's either a free agent or on their practice squad, but that makes him available.
Future Titan, Riley Patterson.
Yeah. I mean, and his numbers in college were pretty good.
Oh, they were really, he was really good. That's what I was thinking of. Riley Patterson, okay. I thought he was on a team.
According to the internets, he was with the Vikings. Okay. Let's see if he's on their practice squad. He might be on their practice squad.
I'm assuming, though, that the rule is still the same, that if you like a guy on another team's practice squad and you want to sign him to your roster, you can still do that, right? You could raid. So you could have a guy on your practice squad.
Unless
but they
they're
could
protected.
Be signed.
Yeah, because the starting kicker for the Vikings is Greg Joseph. Patterson is on. No, I don't want to subscribe to your newsletter. Thank you. Yeah, he's not on a team.
Okay. Future Titan kicker.
Okay. Put him on the list.
Write him down.
Rack him.
There you go. Any more kicking news and notes for us, Elijah? You
got that's anything? Actually
that's a very
really,
good study.
That is 13.
We learned some things. 13 out of 31 have been picked, but only four on their original team that drafted them.
I guarantee you no other human being on this planet spent more time looking at Football Reference kicker pages in a 15-minute span than I just did.
So I guess what this tells me is, because I kind of went off earlier, that maybe the league just feels this way about kickers and just know that they can have
they
a revolving
feel
door.
It, but like I said, wouldn't you say that even if you were like the number one person sounding the horn for kickers every week, I love kickers, I value kickers, it still is not a clear path on what the best way is to grab a kicker.
No.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah, no, I would totally agree with that, especially after Elijah's fine work there.
Ah, see, we learn things on this show.
I mean, it's what we do. I just looked up Matt Reagan, another former Memphis kicker. He's giving private kicking lessons now in Tennessee. So maybe, you know, some of these
He's got a new student this week. Yeah. Did you know that? Michael Badgley.
Yeah. Well, he could use it. Well done.
Got a call from Michael Badgley on line one. Sign him up.
When they, I just remember when they said they signed him to the practice squad, I just went, oh.
Listen, I don't care where you were before or who you are, if I've heard of you or not. It's so weird. It's just, if you miss that first kick, and that guy could have been the hero. Sam Sloman came in. Nobody had ever heard of him. He got the job done.
Where is he now?
I don't know, but isn't it crazy? It's like these goalies in hockey sometimes who come out of nowhere. There's a guy sick and there's a guy hurt. Oh, my gosh, who's our third guy? Give him a shot. That guy could be named Chris Mason, Thomas Vokoun, Dan
Ellis.
But
you don't play that game, though, in hockey. It happens, but you're not in that business. It feels like the NFL, or it feels like the team here is kind of in the business of, we'll just keep trotting them out there, and somebody eventually will stick. Like, the NHL isn't actively just looking for the Hamburglar storyline, right? They're just not out there just throwing darts looking for a guy like Anderson just to all of a sudden explode and, you know, become a kicker or a goalie. Because more times than not, like, that window eventually closes, and usually it's sooner rather than later, right? He had that monster, and then, you know, he's never the same again. He never could revisit that, whatever.
Yeah,
that,
so,
that
some
that,
do. Some,
that magic
some get
that happened,
the opening.
He couldn't bring it back.
Some get the opening only because there's an injury and you get your shot. Like Carter Hutton benefited and became a trusted NHL goalie because Pekka got the hip injury. And
yeah,
he
but
had
NHL
to play.
Teams will spend draft picks on goalies. It's not like they're out there just got undrafted.
No, I get what you're saying there. But I'm just talking about sometimes your entry into the league, your window of opportunity happens because somebody else screwed up or somebody got hurt, and there's just a desperation. Right now, there's a great opportunity in Nashville. That's kind of my theme of the day. Fly in. There's opportunity because there's desperation. All you got to do is come out and make a couple kicks. You got a job.
Yeah.
If you just get off to a good start and take advantage.
At least for a week.
And so Michael Badgley had the worst case scenario. He comes out, he misses the very first kick, and he's done. It's over. You just knew it was going to be tough.
He's in his head.
And when it happens in your home stadium, the second time he gets trotted out there, it's a bad feeling. You're like, oh boy, this guy's already missed an extra point. And sure enough, he missed the field goal, and now the weight of the world's on his shoulders.
Yep.
The third time he comes out there, they're hoping the fans are booing. Go, why aren't you going for two? You're behind. Why do we want this guy out there?
Yep. No doubt about it. All right, we'll come back, wrap up the second hour of Darren Dunnick and Chase. Silly underdog picks coming up at High Noon. But first, let me talk to you about my friends at Cool Springs MD. You know, you've heard me talking about them for years because I've been going there for years, and they've been helping me for years, and they can help you. And they do a lot of things under one roof. It's a state-of-the-art facility out there in Cool Springs at 1642 Westgate Circle. If you don't believe me, go see it for yourself. But they've got a very experienced staff. They've got Dr. Jeffrey Lodge, who's the board-certified physician, his wife Daphne, the registered nurse, and their staff that can help improve your quality of life. And as we all get older, I would hope that you would want that like I do. They can help you become healthier and happier. For example, maybe you've tacked on some unwanted pounds lately and you would like to shed them. That happens as we're adults. They take weight loss management very serious, and they've got programs and products and people that can get you back on track ASAP. Rejuvenation. Your appearance should be important. It gets tougher as we age, but they'll sit down with you and discuss hair removal, Botox, PRP. They do it all in that category. And also hormone therapy. Maybe you've been feeling off lately. You haven't felt yourself. You haven't had any drive, and you're trying to figure out what in the heck is going on. Get your levels checked. Maybe they've dipped. Maybe they've dipped to an all-time low. It tends to happen as we age. Well, their experienced staff will discuss testosterone, estrogen, BHRT with you. Those are just some of the things they do at Cool Springs MD. If you need to schedule an appointment or a consultation, pick up the phone and dial this number, 615-283-7291. That's 283-7291. Or you can always go to their website and learn everything about them by going to coolspringsmd.com. Don't forget, 94.9 is the official English radio home of the Nashville Soccer Club. Listen in this Saturday as Nashville SC takes on Toronto, where Richard Deitch is. Pregame starts at 6:15. The match begins at 6:30. So keep that in mind this Saturday. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, we'll have Silly Underdog Picks coming up at high noon. So I asked Kayla Anderson, who joined us in the first hour, pushing aside this kicker situation that we've been talking about, what is right now the number one concern for you? Willie, I'll start with you, heading out to Seattle. Like I said, keep the kicking thing, Okay. Shove it off to the side.
I'm going to keep it basic, and I'm going to go specifically first down. I said yesterday, running the ball, sort of related, but to get the running game going and to get that rhythm that I'm still hoping to see in what makes the Titans go, the running game and then the play action off the running game, it starts on first down. They were not just bad on first down. They were horrendous on first down, especially in the key moments of the game when they were falling behind. Their first down plays were getting them nothing, minus yards a lot of times, or, you know, 0-1, and they weren't staying on time. That's got to get a lot better. And if it does, then that gives you a lot better chance of just getting into that flow, getting into what you want from your offense. They never got into it, and so I'm just going to say start on first down. The very first carry of the season, first play of the season is a -3. Just, whoa. And there were a lot of plays like that, just really frustrating. Like, okay, here we go. Next series, let's get it going. And the first play goes nowhere. And they're in a hole, and then it just gets worse from there. So yeah. I'm going to say efficiency on first down will hopefully have a domino effect and solve some of these other areas of concern.
I think that's a good
Chase?
One. That's a good one. For me, it's the secondary. Because let's make sure that Jack Rabbit has the right shoes this week so he's not falling down. That would be good.
Okay.
Going up
against Seattle, very important. Could be, you know.
Yeah. No Hooker. Yeah. How does that look?
Yeah, no Amani Hooker. You're going up against Lockett and Metcalf. Elijah Molden had his welcome to the NFL rookie game last week. Mm-hmm. Christian Fulton was, I guess, the lone bright spot. Mike Vrabel did bring him up. And gave him some props, but
were you guys surprised, by the way, Chase, to your point on that he got the benefit of the doubt and they didn't call? I mean, he's a second year guy. AJ Green is a guy who's been in the league forever, and I got to be honest, I thought he could have been hit with some pass interference calls that he seemed to get the benefit of the doubt. I mean, he's like tugging AJ Green down by his shoulder pads in the end zone, and he got the benefit of the, like, no flag. I was like, okay.
Yeah, that right. One, I was like, oh.
Doesn't it usually go to the veteran, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But overall, he still played very well.
He did. He did. Yeah. So, I mean, he's, like I said, he's the lone bright spot. But, you know, and then Farley basically did nothing.
Does he get more time?
Game.
Well,
I mean, maybe.
Does he get more time this week?
You know, what packages change now that Hooker's out. Mm-hmm. You know, are they going to have to put Molden in at safety a little bit more on certain packages because he can be a versatile DB? So does that open it up to bring in Farley and give him more playing time? You know, that's certainly something to look at. But, you know, with those two receivers that they have in Seattle and DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, it concerns me watching what, you know, obviously DeAndre Hopkins is, you know, in a different league, but I think DK Metcalf is there.
And played that way. Like,
yeah,
he also played really well.
A great player playing great,
that's a tough thing to
I mean,
to
Christian Kirk looked like Jerry Rice compared to, I mean, with this secondary. So that's my answer. This is secondary.
A secondary.
The Farley thing is an interesting one. I do wonder how quickly they'll try to get him in there more. He's got to earn it. Some of it's up to him.
Mine is just to see if this is if this is going to change or not, or is this just going to be another long season with that defense not being able to get off the field on third downs, and that's going to be tested yet again this week. It is going to be extremely difficult on Sunday. Russell Wilson has kind of been in that spot. He's kind of good, and he's maybe a future Hall of Famer. He probably is going to be a future Hall of Famer, no doubt. And can they get off the field? I mean, they gave up 3 touchdowns on third down against Arizona. Can they change that narrative? So far, they have not been able to do it. It was something that plagued them all last year, and through one game, it is still a huge problem. Getting off the field on third down, which, you know, if you want to try to improve and help things and help your offense get things going, that would be a really good start, and they have just been unable to do that and inept in that category. Does that change?
Third down and red zone is such a huge combination of stats. Like and they were so poor in both of them last year, but just think about those plays you're talking about, Darren. And it's not so much that they were out of position. The Cardinals made the great play, the great catch along the end line. That's one of the third downs. The catch by Kirk over the shoulder, that's one of the third downs. And then there was another one that pops into my head. The play where the crowd's into it, you got a chance to stop him, and Murray just ran all over the place. It was Doug Flutie, Johnny Manziel, whoever you want to pick.
That was the Hopkins in the back of the end zone?
No, it wasn't a touchdown. He caught it along the sideline in the tiptoe. He just ran all over the place in the backfield. They just couldn't catch him. Murray, just a phenomenal play. So those swing plays, that make such a big difference.
Willie, tell everybody about Lone Pronto.
Lone Pronto coming at you, and then we'll have the silly underdog picks. So be poised for that. And also, get my message again from Lone Pronto. Remember, the mortgage rates are so low. They can get you in the twos, the APR rate in the twos. If your mortgage rate starts with a 3, you need to give them a call, 615-499-5780. That's 499-5780, area code 615. If you're not even sure what your mortgage rate is, if you're a homeowner, call them, and they can let you know. They can help you because they can lower your house payment every month. And here's the best part. You get to skip your next couple of house payments when you refinance with Lone Pronto. So this is money in your pocket. There's nothing inconvenient about this anymore, too, because it's a streamlined process. They made it all digital. So this is more of a 14-day process in most cases, where it used to take a lot longer. It used to take a lot of red tape and stuff. They've done a great job at Lone Pronto in making this a really hassle-free process for you, and it's going to save you money. 615-499-5780 or go online at loanpronto.com. Equal housing lender.
NMLS 1661781. Subject to lender approval. Not all loans eligible for zero-cost option.